Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. So many of you today are enjoying a holiday, and I'm so delighted you're spending some time with me. We have a fascinating topic today, one that I have not heard very much discussion about, but when I received the material, I thought this definitely needs to be talked about. And what is that topic? It's permanent adolescence. Why boys don't grow up. There's not many people that have the courage to address what I feel is a significant need to be aware regarding young males, because so frequently there is a focus on the girls, and not that that's bad. I'm not putting that down at all, but I think the males need to be talked about, because we're seeing a lot of things in society that are just not what I consider healthy, and I'm sure those of you listening would agree. My guest is Joe Carmichael. Joe, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thanks for having me, Donna.
Joe, you have a fascinating perspective here, and I've had women on the show that have talked about males, but it's so delightful to have a man address this from a male perspective, because I think it is healthy, I think it is necessary, and I think that a lot of the information in your book that you have put here about permanent adolescence is quite timely, and I think men need to hear it, as well as the women. Now, you're an education consultant, you're also a freelance journalist, but you have taught in high school, so you have had direct contact with people, and we're not with young people. We're not talking about, gee, you did this in the 70s or the 80s. We're talking about current. You deal with kids in today's world. You've been involved with gangs, violent adolescents. You have taken the time to get degrees that relate to the area of education and teaching. Why was this important to you? Did you decide to speak out as a man, which I'm grateful for, but why?
It's a good question. When I really came upon this subject, it wasn't something I was seeking to study, but when I was teaching in the schools, and these were high schools in eastern United States, I came across more and more teenage boys that were really failing. And when I say failing, they were failing academically, but moreover, they were failing at growing up. And they really weren't progressing into any kind of adult lifestyle in a successful way. And it happened over and over and over again. And these were kids that I really came to know and care about over the time that I was one of their teachers. So I started to think, you know, there must be a reason behind this, because I was seeing it more and more often. And the older teachers, the more experienced teachers that I worked with, noticed the same thing. It's a trend. It was becoming worse and worse and worse, year after year. And the data from the tests and the assessments really proved that boys were failing at a really, really horrible rate. You know, across the United States, Donna, 65% of boys graduate high school. That's, to me, appalling. We barely have a majority of male students even finishing high school today. So we know we're in the midst of a very serious problem.
I agree with that. And I think a lot of it has to do, and this is my bias, with the lack of role models on the part of male role models for these young men. As a counselor, I interact with a lot of families and people, and I deal frequently with single-parent families. And so many times, the women are raising boys, and they don't understand that boys have to have more of a male environment. They have to have those role models. And I think that is something that contributes to some of this adolescent. And I'm not saying this to put down mothers. I am merely saying that young boys need to have good examples so that they can be responsible adults. And I have seen this across the cultural spectrum. It's not just this, that, or the other.
You've hit on a very important point. And the failure in the American family is really a big part of this. But when we look at families and we look at role models, it's a different genre today. And we see that the kids today are not getting their role models from within their family or their community. And the more research I did on this topic, the more I kept looking at media, because I kept finding that that's where, especially boys, were getting their role models from, popular culture and media. And we know that popular culture and media are not supplying the kind of role models that we'd like to have for our kids. So we see people in movies, television, MTV, wherever it might be, that kids want to be like. They're wealthy. They became successful without working very hard. Mm-hmm. They don't listen to their parents or their older generations. And they kind of made their own way in the world by rejecting the adult culture around them. And that's the sort of persona that kids today, especially boys, are growing up with as the thing that they want to be, that they're seeing all the time. And they see it so often. 22,000 hours is how much television the average child watches by the time he's 18.
Good Lord.
Of that media really puts that kind of role model in the front of their minds.
22,000 hours. That is literally just being brain dead sitting in front of a boob tube.
Well, it is a form of brainwashing. And if you think about it, the time that's spent for the average child in front of a television set surpasses the amount of time spent with family members. And we know that it's not always the content of what we're hearing, but the amount of what we're hearing that plays a big role in how we're influenced. And that's certainly true with television.
That is just amazing to me. Because that equates to 60 hours a week of television. I mean, that is just, or 6 hours a day almost. No, not 60 hours a week, but 6 hours a day almost. That is amazing. I mean, a kid wouldn't even have a chance to get their homework done if they had any homework. And this is something that I'll have to share a personal story with you. There was some work that had to be done on our house, and a gentleman came out and was going to do his head to do some work on the roof. And he's a mature man. And there was a young man that called him up, and he knew this young man. And he said, "Can I borrow some money from you?" He said, "No." He said, "You can." And this young man is 33 years old. 33 years old. He comes out, and he's working, and this is hard work, doing stuff on a roof. And he comes out, and the guy that brought him out said, you know, the kid wanted to borrow some money from me, but I told him he had to work. And he was going to have to follow orders. He would be paid for the day's activities, but he's going to have to work. I wasn't going to loan him any money, which I said, that's great. That's the way you should do it. This young man had just gone through a situation where his girlfriend dumped him because he had lost his wallet and all of his money in his wallet, and he said it wasn't the first time this had happened to him. It had happened to him before. Now, this is a young man that is intelligent, and yet his life, at 32 years of age, he's acting like a teenager. And you feel like you want to just take him by the shoulders and put him out on a fishing boat out in the middle of the Bering Sea and say, you need to get your head clear. Grow up. And I am seeing this. I hear women complaining about this. Let's look at some things that people need to be aware of. For those mothers that have little boys, that they need to be aware of. Now, let's go back into the educational system. I was not surprised by your stories, because I've heard this from teachers like yourself. I was not surprised at your getting a classroom where when you went and you talked and called upon some boys to do some reading, they didn't. Another teacher said, oh, these kids can't read. They can't read. They had been allowed to go into the next grade without being taught how to read, without being disciplined to be expected to read. And you were supposed to do the same thing. Don't call on them. Don't expect anything out of them. Let's talk about this. Boys think differently than girls. It's always been known that the girls will usually start reading and do other things long before boys do, because boys are very physical. They've got a lot of energy. Tell us about what you've gone through and how you're dealing with this, or what you recommend for parents of young boys. What do we need to do here? Because this is appalling.
Well, first and foremost, there's major problems currently in the American educational system. And I think everyone recognizes that, but we're afraid to make any drastic changes. For boys specifically, for the first time in history, they are a minority of college graduates. So we're at the first point in our history where girls are surpassing boys academically.
Right.
And you've put your finger on it. We really set up a model in schools without regarding the differences in the brains of males and females. And they are not the same. They don't mature at the same rate. And specifically, the language areas in the brain where we learn to read and write and communicate mature at very different levels. So we've set up a model that is very suitable to the way girls learn. And it's a passive model. Girls do well hearing and in a still environment. Boys need to get up, need to move around, need to be active, need to interact, mm-hmm. need to talk and chatter. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of behavior that's punished in schools. So we've created a system where if boys do what they're naturally inclined to do, they're going to not succeed. And that is really been the most important factor in why boys are not succeeding academically. So we've got to first understand that, and we've got to work to change the educational system so that it's not one size fits all, but that we can adjust it for the type of learner, the type of student that we see in front of us. And that's very hard in America when we have a sort of, system that wants to treat everyone exactly the same.
And you can't, when you're dealing with as many students as you're dealing with, you're going to have some general principles and expectations. What bothers me is that when I am talking with individuals such as teachers within the school system, for example, in the Seattle area, and they have dumbed down a lot of the things so much, and many of the teachers retired saying, I can't take this anymore. These are not stupid kids. We have to set the bar high because they can reach it. They are not stupid, but we're treating them as if they are for various reasons, and I won't go into that. But you bring something out that I think is very significant. I remember a coach. He had a very gifted player. This player was in high school, had the opportunity to go to college. The coach was not aware that this kid could not read. Now, this is a young man who is gifted athletically. So he asked the parents if he had permission to take this boy and bring him into his own home. This was a boy that, a young man, obviously, when he got to be in his teens, he had a very difficult time sitting still. Now, he'd be out, I think it was basketball, he'd be out there on the court, man, he would just be running and running, and he was disciplined with his sport, he was dedicated, he was right there. The coach knew this kid was intelligent, but he had not been expected to learn, and because he was so skilled at what he did, he was just passed along. Nobody demanded this from him. But he couldn't get into college, and he couldn't become a pro until he learned to read, and he had to learn discipline.
Right.
The coach went and took him into his home. The parents said, you can do it, because he's just not listening to us. Took him into his home, and he would put this young man, he'd go out, work him out on the court, Then he would take them in. He said, okay, these are the rules. If you want to be a pro, you're going to have to learn how to read. You're going to have to do this. You're going to have to do the other. Now, if you want to sign a contract with me, fine. Sign the contract. The kid would be put into one of the bedrooms. He made it into a classroom. And he said, this is what you're going to do. You're going to have to be in here for certain amounts of time. And this kid literally paced the room back and forth and back and forth. The coach said, I'm sitting here. You have to sit down with that book, and you're going to have to learn certain things. And that coach worked with that young man for almost a year. And his reading skills came up, but he demanded it of him. Now, he gave him the physical times out where he could go and play and practice and all this kind of stuff because he was high energy. But he wanted to get his brain working. But it took that kind of concentrated effort and dedication by that coach. He ended up going on to college, and he did well. But the coach stayed on him, and it took almost a full year.
Well, you know, I never want to diminish the input of individuals because on an individual level, there are parents and students and teachers out there that are doing amazing things.
Mm-hmm.
And I could tell stories all night about some of the great people that are in the education system. But again, we know that overall, as a system, the schools are failing. And part of that reason is through the leadership. So the federal government, through No Child Left Behind, has set up a system that really punishes schools if they have students that are underperforming. So teachers don't want to fail students. Schools don't want to have teachers that fail students. Parents don't want to have students that fail. So the entire system is set up to push kids through, whether they have earned it or not. And that's a system that's destined to fail because there's no true accountability.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have tests, standardized tests and state tests. When we put a big emphasis on the testing, those schools that don't meet the test standard are punished. So they have federal funding taken away if they're not meeting a certain level on the tests. And that just takes resources away from them, which could be used to help the students. So it's a very, very poor cycle that we're involved in now. And thankfully, there's some reform that's taking place, although it's very, very slow.
Mm-hmm. It's a tough thing because it's very bureaucratic.
It is.
And there's a number of things that have interfered. And this isn't something that just happened overnight. This is something that has gone on for a number of years. I think it really started in the middle 60s, and then it just progressively picked up momentum. But it is just really appalling. You bring out some statistics, which I think are just absolutely scary, and that is you feel the American family is functioning at its lowest levels ever. In the black community, approximately 65% of children are raised without a father in the household. In the white community, the number is closer to 35%, and both are increasing. What about the Hispanic Latino community?
Well, we're seeing the problem in the American family across all ethnicities and demographics. So it's not consistent to any one part of our culture. But we certainly see that the family has disintegrated to a great extent. And I know that in my work in the schools, I would often run into kids and we'd say, where are you living? And they'd say, with a grandmother, with an aunt, with an uncle. We'd often run into kids that hadn't seen their biological parents in months or years. And this was very common. And think of what it means on an emotional level for a child when they're growing up, and they have no one that they can call father or mother in their life, or no one that they can truly rely on and go to and count on a day-to-day basis. And children are very fragile when they're in that type of environment, and that fragility affects them academically, emotionally, psychically, spiritually, and it's an impediment to any kind of meaningful success. So it all starts in the family. And I don't want to say that single parents can't be successful, because they can, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a lot harder job. There's no question about it.
That's the truth. You make a statement, and this is right at the beginning of your book. You say, we see all around us young, middle-aged, and even older men unemployed or underemployed because of an emotional detachment from commitment and responsibility. Now, I will tell you, I have had conversations with mature adult men who are in their 60s, 70s, and 80s. In fact, I'll have to share something with you. I was listening to two men when I was standing in line at the bank just this last week, and I had to laugh because these were two men that were taking care of their kids, and they sounded like the women sound when they're talking. They said, my goodness, what am I going to do with these kids? They wear me out. I've got a son. I work 15 hours a day. When I come home, my little boy wants attention. And he said, by the time I'm finished with him, I'm totally exhausted. And I just had to laugh. Because these are men that are obviously actively involved with their kids. Now, one of them was a grandfather, and the other one was a father. And I thought, this is good. These are two men that are actively involved with the boys in the family. And it's not just left up to the women. And this is something that is so important. But they complain about the young boys. They complain about the young men, saying, you know, they say, gee whiz, these kids ought to be out working and cleaning streets or maybe helping at an elderly home, doing something here where they get a perspective on reality. They're lost in fantasy land.
Well, you know, Don, I think that time spent with older adults, adult males, is so important for boys. And so many boys today don't have it. And in so many traditional cultures throughout history, there were special times set up where the elders of a community would spend time with the preteen children and sort of show them what the adult culture knew. And we don't do that anymore in our modern day and age. And that's a real shame, because that time spent with the older members of our community can be so meaningful to the development of a young boy. And again, I mentioned the role models. If without older adults as role models, real live human beings that they can have conversations with and talk to about their problems, they'll turn to whatever's available for a role model. And we know that the easiest things that are available are not what we want our kids to see as role models. So, I mean, I would reach out to any adults in the community that feel like they can be a mentor or be part of a child's life. And you don't have to be a biological relative. There's many programs in each community where you can be part of a child's life. And take that step and reach out. The difference that you can make can really be tremendous.
I agree. One of the concerns I have is that people are so safety conscious that they don't, and I see this especially with women, with their sons. I don't want anything happening to my boy. Well, young men, as far as all of my observations through my life experience, and I don't claim to be the expert of experts, but I've never known a boy that doesn't like getting dirty. I've never known a boy that hasn't been curious and done all kinds of things just because, what is it doing? You know, why is it there? How come it's here? And I've never known a boy that hasn't had a mischievous side that has to be held accountable. And I think so often they're not held accountable. I think these retired military, this is my feeling, retired military guys ought to be putting some of these kids in boot camp and just hauling them around to do cleanup work.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of programs out there. I know the Big Brothers and Big Sisters program in my community is very active, and there's a number
great
of ways
group.
That
yeah. Great
you, know,
group.
You can go work in schools as well as a volunteer. I don't know that a particular program is as important as taking part, because we do have a very low participation rate in those type of programs across the country.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, I think what has happened is there is such a disassociation, and something you bring out in your book is communication, language. And I have had conversations just in the last 3 months with people of both professional status, families, and they say they just want to work on the computer, and that's fine. I don't have anything against computers. But to actually sit and have a conversation is almost impossible. They don't know what to do. Where before socially, it was required that you communicate. There was a lot of discussion that goes on. There was a challenge for thinking. I was reviewing material today about a particular culture that their standard for learning is very, very high, but they don't encourage creativity at all. So when you have someone of this background, this particular cultural background, they're going to be seemingly brilliant, but they can't solve problems. And that's something that the American mind typically, and American is, you know, cross-cultural environment totally, it's how do we solve this problem? And it's the brainstorming aspect. How do you, as a teacher, what would you say to a parent to encourage this with a young boy? Because that is a very natural part of them. They want to work with their hands. They want to be dirty. They want to get out there and explore. How can we get past this safety nonsense that we have? And that's just a little tiny speck.
Well, curiosity and creativity are inherent to young boys. So they will always want to learn, to draw, to create, to build things, and to be active in their learning life. So we have to give them those opportunities. In our schools today, we've really built a system that wants to train them to put out a certain product. We want to teach them to do very literal thinking, to meet the very narrow academic requirements that are on the state tests, to be able to perform very narrow calculations and standards that are applicable to business practices. And we've given up a lot of our investment in arts and creativity. So in our homes, we have to make up for that. And one of the ways to do that is to give kids the opportunity to learn while being creative in a little bit looser environment. So I've seen parents teach their 3- and 4-year-olds math, for example, by giving them any kind of object, blocks, toys to count, to accumulate, to sort. And we can start this at a very young age. 2- and 3-year-olds are very eager to learn, and they appreciate success much more than older kids do. So if a child can sort a green and a red pile successfully, they're thrilled with the reaction that they get from their caretaker.
Mm-hmm.
So we build that joy in learning and that joy in creativity at a very young age. And that's one of those things that's imprinted in the brain, that connection between successfully learning and a reward that we get for it. And that can carry through well into high school and college, that somebody is very fulfilled if they can achieve academically. And I really believe that comes from the imprint that they get as a 2-, 3-, and 4-year-old being able to learn in the home and in their most comfortable environment.
I think of a member of my family that was not what I'd call an academic type. However, he was coddled in many ways by his mother quite a bit and wasn't encouraged to read, but he did. He learned to read, and he ended up going in the military. But this was someone that was really, this was a young man that would have been just happy as a clam being a carpenter, happy as a clam doing roofing or being involved in something that allowed him to use his hands. Again, and the creative side, how do I work with this? What do I do? He would have been marvelous in an apprentice program. This is really where he would have been happiest because he wasn't what you'd call college material. How do you think we can learn to recognize aptitudes in young men so that they can be encouraged to go into venues that will make them feel good about themselves? Because we have so many young men who end up getting involved in gangs or in particular activities because they are very physical, they really want to have that feeling of success, and then they identify with an environment that is really so counterproductive to them being a contributing beneficial member of society? What would your suggestions be?
Well, Donna, one of the keys to having boys take an investment in their education is letting them pursue what they're truly interested in. Quick story, we have a great program out here in New York where there's a high school where students can actually develop their own curriculum and pursue a course of study of their choice in an area that really interests them. And I think the more we can do that, the more invested boys will be in their education. It's when we force things on them that they don't like, they don't feel successful at, don't make an investment, they don't give us their full effort. And we want to give them opportunities to pursue what they're truly interested in. So even today in the trades, for example, carpentry, that's a learning process. That's an apprenticeship mm-hmm. process. Mm-hmm. Nothing today is able to, you know, you can't walk in the door and begin a career. So we have to find what the child really is interested in as a domain of learning and then give them as many opportunities as we can to pursue it. And that's true for the academic world that they're in and also the home environment that they're in. And that's going to be a motivational tool to keep them on the right track.
There is so much that you have observed being in and around young men. You talk about the sexual aspect of development, which every human being is going to go through, male or female. But the boys do not have a lot of good mentoring. And there are women that would say it'd be the same with the girls. They're not getting very good examples either. But let's address it from the male perspective. What do you feel young boys need to have so that as mature males, one, they can be a very good husband, two, they can be self-sufficient? How do you get them through that process? We don't have initiation cycles like various environments, cultural environments years ago had.
Well, again, we have to provide meaningful mentoring and learning opportunities for young adults, and especially when they get to be teenagers. 10, 11, 12, and 13-year-olds need adults that are meaningful people in their lives to show them the way. It's helpful for a male to have an adult male to guide them. But if that's not possible, other adults can certainly fill that role. But they do need adults that they can look to and trust to show them the way. What we want to do is steer them away from the pop culture guidance that they're receiving, because that is not going to be the mode of choice for learning initiation and ritual. So we want to keep them away from television. We want to keep them away from their peer groups' influence in those areas. And then we want to also provide them opportunities to learn sexualization and relationships with successful role models. So we want to provide examples. So within a family, for example, whomever it might be that we know has a good, solid relationship, we can help the child spend time with those people, help them have a discussion about what makes their relationship strong and meaningful, and what are the components of a strong and meaningful relationship. These are seem like very simple learning activities, but they're things that many kids have never learned or never been part of and have never seen in their own home. So when we say that we want to expose kids to a good relationship, many of us take it for granted, but many kids have never seen one, and they certainly don't see them on television. So we have to work very hard sometimes as parents and educators to seek out those opportunities to show children.
Well, your book, Why Boys Don't Grow Up, Permanent Adolescence, Joe, I think you've done a very good job with this, and you present many different paradigms of thought, and it's been a delight having you as a guest. Now, you do have a website, permanentadolescence.com. So if those of you listening, if you have a boy in your environment, a male's perspective, I think, is a healthy one. We don't live in caves, that's true, but we need to recognize and respect that boys are definitely different than girls, and you don't try to put them in a box, because just as much as girls don't like boxes, boys don't either. But they do need to have good example. Joe, thanks so much for being my guest. Joe Carmichael is the author of Why Boys Don't Grow Up, Permanent Adolescence. Thank you again for being with me today.
Thanks for
having me. This is Donna Sebo. You were taking a break. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hello, and this is Donna. I hope you're having a fabulous holiday for whatever you want to do. And here's the toll-free telephone number to call in if you would like to have me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. It's 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Now, I know we've got a caller on the line waiting, but before I go to that caller, I want to let those of you know who are listening from the state of Washington. You're hearing, you will be hearing the ad regarding the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair. Well, I'll tell you what, I have 12 free passes, and it's for a family. So if you would like to have a free pass to this magnificent event that's the first 3 weekends of August, I want you to send me an email or call me directly at my office. So call me at 800-872-8852, or you can email me, donna@delphiinternational.com, and you will get a free pass. Let's take our first caller of the day. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for taking my call.
Hi, and who am I speaking with?
Nadine.
Hi, Nadine. And where are you calling from?
From Phoenix.
All right. Now, Nadine, the first thing that I am looking at here, oh, this is funny to me, it's a cartoon. And it's as if you're wanting to punch somebody right in the nose. So they're pushing your buttons is what they're doing. And I'm seeing you saying, how in the world can I get this person to think? They are stuck in this little box of mind, and it's as if I can't get them past that. Well, I think the best way to get them past is to ask questions. Ask questions. Ask them what they think would be appropriate, or how would they like to see something done, just to get their brain moving. Because I think what you've got here is someone that's so preoccupied with things that are going on in their own environment that they're half listening to you. They're not really paying attention, and you're having to repeat yourself in such a way. So there needs to be what I call the jolt of a particular question that'll get their attention right away, and that will assist you dramatically. You're really going to have a nice summer here. You will not have as much money to spend this summer as you would like, but I think part of that is going to be because you're going to be very conservative with what you have, which is appropriate. And I think that you really should save as much cash as possible, because there's going to be a very special trip that you're going to want to take during the late fall of this year. And I think it's well worth the money spent to take the trip. And it is definitely going to be in your favor. But you are going to find that you have to get out of the rut yourself, because you're sort of stuck in the mud mentally on certain levels of your life. But that's okay. You're going to be able to get up and out of that. And sometimes it's just so simple as doing something physical, like going out and walking around the block, or just changing your routine, doing things a little differently. And then you're going to be just fine. What's on your mind? What did you want to ask me about?
I interviewed for a job. And
good
I wondered
for you.
If you saw me. I wonder if you saw me getting that.
What kind of job is it? You're going to hear it within 2 to 4. So if you're going to hear within 2 to 4 days or 2 to 4 weeks, what kind of a positioning are you applying for?
It's people-oriented, so I'm working with people, and it's just communication, in the area of communication.
You have a very good chance with this, and there may be a call-in for another interview. And I just want you to relax and be yourself. I don't want you to try to be too concerned about impressing someone. They already have listened to you, listened to what you have to say, and I think they liked your presence. So this time you really want, the next time that I feel you're going to talk to someone, there is going to be a door open. It's not totally wide open. So I think there may be someone else in consideration. But I think you have just as good a chance as the other individual, and you need to look at presenting yourself as a person that is upbeat. I'm not talking about giddy-giddy, but I'm just talking about an upbeat person, someone that is going to be able to do what they need to do for themselves, and that you're responsible, you're accountable. I think you've got it. So
thank
give it
you.
Your best. And congratulations.
Oh, thanks very much.
You're very welcome. But also keep your applications going out to some other places, because there's 2 other potential opportunities that may be evolving for you that you would like to definitely consider stepping into.
Yeah, I consider this present one kind of a stepping stone.
Right, absolutely. So keep those applications going out.
Thank you.
You're very welcome, Nadine. Have a wonderful holiday.
You too. Thank you.
This is Donna Sebo. Now, if you'd like to call in and chat with me, give me a buzz at 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Well, you know, there are so many wonderful foods out there in the grocery stores. Don't you just love all of the fresh cherries and the watermelon and the cantaloupes? And yes, I know they're coming in from different parts of the world. One of our favorite stores here, we have a local, sort of like a farmer's market here in the area. And it's wonderful to go in there, because many times we will have produce right from the local area. And I happened to notice these gorgeous beefsteak tomatoes. And I knew they weren't totally ripened, which is just the way it happens in today's world. So I asked, because they were so large, some of them were huge. I said, are these from over on the eastern Washington side, which we get a lot in from that area? And they're delicious. They're absolutely wonderful. And they said, no, that's going to be next week. These are from California. And I thought, we really are fortunate in so many ways today, because I can remember in traveling up into Alaska where they couldn't get fresh fruits and vegetables all year round. Well, today they do. And it wasn't all that long ago. And then, you know, just about anywhere you can get fresh fruits and vegetables because of our infrastructure. Now, a lot of them aren't vine ripened, so they don't have the high nutrient quality that they would otherwise. But, you know, fruits have so much value to them. And one of my favorites, in fact, when I fixed our special Sunday breakfast, they were blueberry pancakes that I fixed. Blueberries are loaded with nutrients. And if you want, if you've been out gardening and doing a lot of physical activity, do you know if you have a bowl of blueberries? They are packed with nutrients. And if you've had a lot of physical strenuous activity, it helps to neutralize that. Who would have thought something so good could do so much? Just keep it in mind. So enjoy those fresh fruits. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break when we come back. A little bit of this, a little bit of that, and I'll even chat with you if you like. 888-815-9756. We'll be right back.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. I wanted to share a story with you about a woman. Her name is Nancy. Nancy decided that she wanted to make a difference, and she said, when you work hard, dreams do come true. Now, one of the big American dreams for a lot of people is to have your own home. Many, many, many people have lost their homes due to the economic turndown that we've gone through. But this single mother, Nancy, she said, you know what? I want to help other people be able to realize their dreams. And it was very meaningful to her when a young woman by the name of Mickey, she was a single mom, when she was able to get this young woman a home. And there was a man, a member of this young woman's family. He said, do you know, no one in our family has ever owned a house. If it weren't for what you are doing, my Nikki might still be living in a shelter. Thank you. You know, it's an amazing thing. People sometimes will go through experiences in life, and then all of a sudden they find a calling. And that's what happened with Nancy. Nancy decided she needed to redo her home. Her home needed to be upgraded. So she found someone, a contractor, that assisted her, but it was taking too long. So she said, I'm going to get involved in this. So she and the contractor worked together. But what happened is that she was able to recognize that she had a knack for doing things. And she said the work was finished ahead of time. And she enjoyed doing this hands-on work so much that she thought, I wonder why more homes aren't brought up to par. And she lives in North Carolina, and she said there were all kinds of little homes that were being bulldozed, replaced with big, large, expensive homes. And she said what was left of these homes, these little ones, were being tossed into landfills. And she said, you know what? There's a lot of people that would like just a little home. Well, as it turned out, Nancy had a small inheritance that had come from her dad. And she said, you know what? I think I'm going to start renovating affordable homes. So she kept her eyes open, found a listing for a house that was slated to be demolished. So she had this contractor she had developed an association with. They looked at it. He gave her the particulars because he had the experience to really make an assessment on what needed to be done. And he said, this is what we can do to bring it up to par. And she said, okay. And both of them went to work. They renovated this little house, painted it, new fixtures, new carpeting down on the floor, and she put the house back up on the market. Now, she did something a little different. She did not put it back up for profit. She sold it at cost. And a young man bought the house. He said, you know what? I work for the city, but I could never afford to buy a house for my family until now. Well, she renovated two more houses. The families that bought these houses were responsible people. They wanted a good home for their children. Nancy said, this is so good. I'm really having a good time with this. She started buildersofhopenc.org. You can look her up on the web, buildersofhopenc.org. Now, it is a nonprofit that rescues homes from demolition and rebuilds them for low-income families. One woman linked up with a contractor doing something. She didn't have to do this, but she found she had a sense of joy with it. Now, right now, she is, with the support of donations, creating an entire neighborhood. She's saving and refurbishing 24 houses priced at just $89,000 to $185,000 in an area where similar homes cost four times as much. Guess what? They're selling. They are selling just as fast as she gets them finished. Families are moving in, and she said, I absolutely love doing what I'm doing. And she said, it is enabling her to see a change in the lives of people. And she's feeling like she's really accomplishing something. Now, she is continuing to create affordable new communities throughout North Carolina, New Orleans, and the Builders of Hope even offer a mentoring program for at-risk youth and folks who've lost their homes or are out of work, where they can learn job skills and budget their finances. She said, we're rebuilding lives. If in your community something like this could help, why not get in touch with Nancy? It makes a difference. When we care and we participate, it really is important. And sometimes you may not figure out what your passion is. There may have to be a particular circumstance that will push your aha button. But when you do what you love, you're going to find that you're going to be overjoyed at being able to continue it. This is Donna Siebel, and I know that we're just about out of time. I wanted to let you know that we are going to be talking about pause and effect, but it's P-A-W-S and effect. Sharon Saxon is my guest. Oh, we are going to have some of those wonderful animal stories for you, and I would encourage you to tune in and listen. It is absolutely a joy. She's a surprise guest, and her stories are absolutely awesome. So we're going to be here same time, same place, right here at bbsradio.com, and I invite you and your friends to join me for a delightful experience. Oh, by the way, Jonathan Goldman, who is going to be with me with music on Wednesday, that's not going to be possible. Something came up. He called me this morning. He said, Donna, I can't make it, but we've rescheduled him for August the 10th. So that information will be forthcoming as well. Have a wonderful holiday. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be talking again real soon. Have fun. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.
Welcome, my lords and ladies, to the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair, located at Maris Farms in Buckley, Washington. For 3 weekends in August, starting August 7th and 8th, we will transport you back to the days of old, where magic and merriment reign. Come see the multitude of musicians, dancers, jugglers, gypsies, peasants, nobles, pirates, and prestidigitation. That's magic for you commoners. Learn to swing a sword or shoot a bow and be knighted by Her Majesty the Queen. Hold your breath as jousters wheel their mounts around to engage in full contact combat on the field of battle. Sign on to sail the seas with scurvy pirates, or sit down with friends and family for turkey legs and a fine brewed ale. Delights abound for the young and old at the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair, so come one and all, starting August 7th and 8th, for fun and excitement, and may your day be fair. For tickets and info, go to www.washingtonfair.com.